you. Okay, you guys hear me? Oh, yeah. You guys can hear me now. How you guys doing? You guys been a long few days? Having fun? That's great. I'm glad also you can enjoy Redmond Sun right now today since it came out yesterday, so it's good. My name is Joseph Zafir, and I've been working in Microsoft since 2000. And during the last 6 years, I've dedicated myself a lot to data, big data, data pipelines, data science, and quality based on data. A lot of you guys today, you guys getting a lot of information related to the type of technologies that exist today and how to you can grab information from your whatever system you're building to be able to send it to a big data. To you can actually, we have talks about Azure. We're going to have talks later about Power BI, how to do some data intelligence. And for me, this specific talk, I dedicated to be able to start thinking into how you approach this problem from a structural thinking way. Because I had this problem a lot when I was here in Microsoft starting to work related to technology. A lot of engineers like me start pushing data to everywhere. But looking at data in a structured way made it more simple for us to be able to start solving some of the problems. And I want to share some of those learnings with you guys and see how you guys can use this information. So I will start by how you set yourself up for success, and I will end up with some case studies and examples with you guys to be able to see when you start thinking about it. So a lot of people that I was working on all the time, they start moving toward like, I want to start doing machine learning. And a lot of times the understanding of being doing alerting, anomaly detection, all those pieces come from the learning of the basic data. And a lot of times people does not get some of that information, and it may take you a little bit more time to be able to start having that information and be able to act on it. So let me start by what are the basics and setting up for your success. Like I was talking with you guys, big data now is the new world, the new fuzzy word that you get here. And a lot of you guys, my guests, have learned about the different technology. Have you guys used big data? Are you guys using big data today? Anything related to big data? No? Hadoop? Anything talking about Hadoop? Saying no? You're still in SQL? Which is fantastic, actually, to be able to do some of the aggregated data that you have to be able to do SQL, Power BI. When we start talking about massive sets of events, of errors and services, things like that, you may need a lot of big systems to be able to start deduping some of that information to get some sense out of it. But even though you have used big data systems or not, this information that I'm going to share with you guys is really good. Also, during this week, you're learning a lot about all these big data solutions with Azure, Azure Data Lake, Power BI, and all these things related to anomaly detection that are fantastic that you can use out of the box. So let me start to talk about how you can organize your data. The first thing that I always talk with people is, do you really know what the problems they're trying to solve? And most of the times people say, hey, I just want to be able to show you if something's working or not. And then when you start delving into what is the problem you're trying to solve, it's something extremely important for you guys to brainstorm to be able to get to the root cause or the root case of what you're trying to solve. Most of the times you think about symptoms, but not really to the problem that you're trying to solve. It's really important to go back and think about it. And then with that, you come with a lot of things related to what are the questions I want to be able to have answered. And that is really interesting because that helps you a lot thinking about the different dimensions that you need to have to build your data on. You know, a lot of times when I started working in the area of quality, which was the first area I worked on, we start talking about, hey, I want to be able to understand reliability or the crashes on my apps. You know, how many times somebody boots the app and how many times is it successful to boot that app without a crash? A lot of you guys may have seen this. But being in office or being, I was in Windows, working in the 3D area. So being in all those areas, you start pretty quickly understanding that your app or your service is being used or is being deployed by millions of users in different countries. And in some of these cases, if you don't pivot this information by country, by area or by geographic location you're in a service, then you may be missing some of the information that needed to be able to understand what's happening in your product. That's why it's so important for you to be thinking about the different questions you want to have, different dimensions you want to go after to be able to understand and answer those questions you have. Another big one I have is taxonomy. In Microsoft, depending where you are at, you're going to work with multiple disciplines and multiple teams. And my guess in your line of work, you do the same. And it's extremely important to define taxonomy of when you talk about data. What is, a simple thing. What is the difference between a metric and a measure? being honest with you guys, I mean, you can define in different ways. You can look for that answer. But a lot of people, when they're talking about metrics, are talking about measures too. Or they use it in the same way. Or what's the difference between a metric and a KPI, a key performance indicator? It's extremely important to start defining some of those. Those are simple ones. But defining that with the different people you're working on, then you can talk the same language. You cannot imagine the type of mistakes that we have done only because we have not actually spoken the same language. So it's really important to have that set of definitions early with you, with the multiple disciplines that you have you work with, or the different teams you work with, so you talk the same language. And the last one I have is, does each discipline know anything related to the data role? What is your role into data on big data in your disciplines? How many of you guys work with project managers, engineers, maybe testers, and all that? Do you really know what is the role in each one of those on the data when you start pulling the data metrics? What is this stuff? Like, this is really interesting because not understanding the role is makes it more difficult. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it in my next structure too, so I can give you more examples related to it. So the way that you can improve, and I've talked already about it, is sharing this across teams, the taxonomy, talking about deduping the duplication of work between you guys to understand the type of data, who's looking at the data and how. And also collaboration across all the teams and orgs that you have across Microsoft was something extremely important for us to define and do it in a way that is easier to be able to get to the results that you want. Now, the number one thing that we did is definition of data and structure. And this is what this pyramid is, I think, is the basis of how we look at data when we start trying to get insights about the product that you have. At first, we define it into the set of data that help us achieve the quality of the product or system health. Yeah, this is something that's pretty normal to software engineers. Most of you guys are software engineers in some cases. Is that right? Right, that's great. So this is pretty common for you guys to start thinking into, is my code or the health of the code working really well? And can you measure that with data? How many of you guys are doing that with data today? Understand, you guys have a log instrumentation. Is that you see the logs and start looking at the logs and going over there. I'm like, oh yeah, this is failing, not failing. You can actually start creating metrics related to that to make it your life easier based on that. So it's you start thinking about, okay, how do I make sure that any operation I have is successful? Examples. A lot of you guys do open files. My guess is you're interrupt here talking about Office. You're talking about communicating with SharePoint and going down graph to the SharePoint list, anything you have, grabbing a file, unopening. Is that right? How many of you guys are doing that with your own application? Nobody? Maybe? Oh, you're a tough group. Tough group. Damn. All right. So one of the things that we do in the Office applications is to be able to say, hey, is file open working correctly? And that's part that we do in system health. And that's why we start talking about, is that specific scenario reliably working correctly? Yeah. You say, let me open that file and then say, and Office has multiple backend stores. You know, you can do it from the network. You can do it from SkyDrive, OneDrive, or any type of drives you can imagine that is a content management system. And does it work 100% of the time? So this is the area we talk about health. You start talking about, is my product working as intended? And performance is another big thing. Like, hey, it opens, but it takes 3 hours to open the file. Okay, that's great. That latency is fantastic. Or is it hogging the machine related to hardware? So this is all related to system health that we talk about. Availability, reliability, performance, resource utilization. I would start creating that taxonomy, and the way we do it, because it's important, to talk the same language. What is availability? Anybody? Who writes services? What's availability? Correct. It's fantastic. It's the ability for you to know to measure that your service is always the uptime of the service. It's up and running all the time. Yeah. Now, the question becomes, in what does it mean to be uptime? Is that the service endpoint is always up, yeah, because it can ping the service, or that the service whose host files is always up and running to be able to have the ability to operate with the files. And then this is really interesting discussions to have, because most of the times people say, it's just the ability of the service to be up to be able to respond to commands. It can be just that in uptime. And you can define that how you want, yeah? But there's areas that we start talking about, you know what, that for users or customers,
They don't care if you're up or not. I just care about opening and saving documents in my service. So you need to start talking about some of that and see, is that part of reliability? So you start defining all the scenarios related to it and talk the same language. When you're talking with your PM or project manager and your tester, what is availability? Everybody should know what the definition of that thing is. Yeah. And then you can go to the rest of them. What is availability for a client? It's really good, interesting questions we have. Does that actually go to apps of the clients available? Is it available all the time to be able to boot? You can define it or not. And the reliability is the one that most people know. You can talk about crashes. This is the percent of sessions that are successful versus is failing. And you can pass that to scenario. Like opening files is reliable. That means that every time I try to open a file, it always opens. Or when it fails, you start calculating some of that. And you go around about performance. Performance, a lot of people call, some cases call latency. Other people think about resource utilization and performance, like is it hogging the machine or not. You can define each one of the buckets. This is not only for buckets, just giving examples of that. But the main idea is that system health is the base of your code is working as you expect it. The question becomes before that is, hey, who owns the health of the code and system? Who owns creating those metrics and be able to make sure it works really well? It's really interesting because in Microsoft, as you know, we did some work related to software engineering owning also the quality of the code. So in our case, so software engineer owns the definition of that metric and make sure it's working the code, working all the time correctly. But different teams have different disciplines. There's quality organizations, there's software engineering. My goal here is to make sure that you understand that you need to define who owns. Whenever you don't have accountability, you don't have ownership, and nobody actually do it, and then it just doesn't happen. So that's why, for us, you can define what the discipline partner it is. And in some cases, this is really interesting because you can have data scientists to start looking at the data, and you start talking about those guys that start thinking about, now I understand the metric of successfully opening a file or not, and you say, hey, can I start alerting? Are there any conditions that can help me understand before it starts failing that open files is not working? This is where I start deciding, start thinking, or my suggestion is always learn about how you can measure that metric, and then you can start walking towards like, can I detect it before they happen? This is where people start thinking about data science, modeling, machine learning, regression. Analysis of regression on multiple models or multivariable regression analysis that can help you define if you can detect it before. But if you don't understand the signal earlier, you can spin and spin and spin on that model and make it wrong. That's why I say to start, don't boil the ocean, start small, start understanding your KPI, and then start moving forward. Experience health. This is where we start measuring what does the customer experience look like? Are the customers having fun or not having fun? Do they love our product or they don't love our product? Yeah. You can write the most amazing app and service that works 100% of the time, but nobody comes. Yeah. So what is more important? To write an app that is working all the time, but nobody comes, or write an app that fails some of the times, but everybody loves it? So which one is more successful? So this is the piece that you start thinking about it. Of course, you want to find the right level of it, and you want to understand how that works. But if you start defining how you're going to measure the experience of the customer and the health of that, is fantastic. And in this area, you're going to start talking a lot about user feedback. You know, send me feedback. And in most cases, if you have an app in the store, you go to the store ratings, you look at the comments, you start doing all this natural language mining, and go and start finding to understand, hey, any clusters of feedback that can bucket on and can help my design and stuff like that. In this area is also interesting because one of the things that we try to do is that subjectivity of the user telling you they love it or they hate it. And can you do some sentiment analysis of the information that comes in to be able to understand some of that and be able to get to the design or bug issues that you may have. So that's how we define experiences health. We can, in some cases, we can do it at scenario level or you can do it at app level. You can start thinking and prompting messages of the user and say, hey, how was your experience opening a file? Can you rate it from 1 to 5? You could be intrusive that way. You know, the question is, do you want to do it or not? When do you take the shots is important too, but you can definitely do it. And it's important to be able to understand that. In this area is really interesting because we're pushing extremely our project managers or product managers to own that. The main idea is if your experience is crappy, the person who designed it better knows. Yeah, better to know that person. If you did a bad design, you better know what the experience of the user is. And you should be the one who be able to look at the data and try to improve it. Yeah. That's how we define it in our area. You see also usage here as part of this experience, because when you start looking at that, how people is using your product, it can help you try to find information that you may not understand or may not have. Like maybe you don't have the store ratings, but you start looking into a trend of usage going down of your product. You don't the expected usage you have or you were expecting is not at the level you're getting. So you can start asking some of the questions of why. That's why usage is there. So it's an interesting also metric you can use to be able to understand the experience of the user. The final one I have here is business health. Like, who doesn't want to make money in some way or another? You know, in some cases, that's what most people are here for. And you can define that money is not the big thing, but in the business, it's amount of users that you have. But usually, you monetize that. You know, it's where you want to go. The question is, who owns that? The business health is related to how many people do I have? What is my monthly active devices or my monthly active users? How much money I'm making based on those users? All these things related to the users. And the question becomes into who owns it? Yeah, and in our case, is the business manager or the group project manager. But again, there's somebody accountable for it to be able to make sure that things are working really well. Can any of you guys tell me why this is looking in a pyramid? Why this isn't a pyramid? Why is not separated? Actually, I'll show you a different slide for each one of them. Why do you think we put in a pyramid? Why are you feeding this audience, man?
Final goal.
Huh?
Because it's a foundation. It's a final goal.
It's the foundation. That's a great answer. It's really a foundation that to be able to get to the goal. Any order? Any orders? Any other reasons do you guys believe so? The base is the most important, and the one is less. It's a great theory, by the way. It's not saying that the code is one, is the size is more important than other ones. It's where you start up. But it's interesting to be able to start thinking on those. And this is the question I was saying, what is more important? Do you build a product that everybody uses and has bugs, or a product that nobody uses and is perfect, no bugs? What do you guys think is more successful? The one that's being used, all right? Depends on, you're right, depends on your goal. And depends what you define by usage, you know, too. It's the people usage. Yeah. It's interesting because you need to find the right balance in both of them. It's an interesting discussion we continue to have internally to the teams I work with. Any other things why it's a pyramid?
So I'm going to say that you are just making an assumption that monetization is at the top.
Oh, no.
It's just like a large amount of business models in this industry where that is not at all.
Totally. You're completely right. I should have said, you know, I just didn't have more space. But you're right. It should have just moved around. I don't think monetization could be at the top in that area. I think the area of system business, I'll put it at the top because in some ways is the head of why you're doing what you're doing. But you're correct. It's already. One piece that a lot of people think about it, and before I give you the answer why it's a pyramid, I'll tell you the fourth one I added. This I added a year ago because all the stuff that you want to do without a good platform sucks, man. It's just bad. You always end up building or rebuilding this stuff and you don't find a really good platform that you want to use. And this is where this week you guys are getting a lot of information about what system you can use. We have the Azure pipelines. We have the reduced systems, some app systems that we have on Cosmos and OData, but also data analysis platform, which is R and R server. So the platform that you choose to do all those metrics, and then you start talking about experimentations and what is the best way to experiment, this is so critical for you to enable all these pieces out. Yeah. And the main reason why it's at the bottom is because it doesn't exist anymore. And why it's a pyramid is all this stuff is correlated. It's completely correlated. You know, if you don't define what is my business success, it's really hard to be able to understand how you guys start measuring you're being successful or not. And it's really interesting. I'm going to give you an example later about this and why. What are those key metrics? But the correlation of this data is so, so important. Look, we have had issues that we say, oh, our monthly active users went down. And you know what happened? Is the ability for new users to sign in was broken for 2 weeks. Yeah. And we didn't have the correlation. But we were able to see something's going wrong. Like, we're like, how is that you see the monthly active users? And you see a dip. Like, what? Like, it's not like one day to the next, people just stop using the product. Start digging, and we really will have problem on the system health, but we didn't have the data to measure that. But we were able to be able to see that somewhere else, you know? And you start correlating all this data, making sure that it's correlatable. It just gives you a good sense of how your whole thing looks like and works like. Yeah. And I'll give you examples on that in the next thing. So before I give you the examples, I tell these people really a lot. I just like to give the message, which is don't boil the ocean. Like, people want to be running before they learn how to crawl. And by that I mean is always thinking about, I said, people start thinking about how you guys are doing. Start thinking about definition of your KPIs, your metrics. And I said, start with one. I just so funny. If you don't, the first one you start with to define is the one that takes you the longest, and you iterate and go and go and go until you get it right. Yeah. And then it just becomes easier and easier for you to go. Yeah. And then you start refining some of these things. We said at first you were just pulling the data manually in some areas, start putting some of the reports, automating some of these pieces start happening. They start feeling that, hey, this is really happening. You know, this is occurring. And you can know, hey, why does this happen? Can I understand what happened? You can go start doing diagnostics, understanding those diagnostics. And then you have a system that starts working for you to know what the things are occurring. And then that's where I believe you can go to predictive analytics. You know, a lot of people start on the predict, trying to predict, which is an okay form too, actually. There's a lot of people who has really good knowledge that can go start looking at the data, start looking at the clusters, clustering all the data, listen to all the things. Oh, this is the reason why it happened. But most of the time, so you understand your metric and KPI, I guarantee you can predict it. You can predict it. We have gone through this in both ways, and it helps a lot. So next to this, I'm going to give you an example of this pyramid specifically how we executed in this pyramid with a specific example that we did in specifically to a project I worked on related to 3D. And we started talking about, hey, what is important for us to start measuring on system health. And a big thing for us, and a lot of research data tells us that the app launch time was something really important for the user as the first thing that comes in. You know, if that app doesn't boot within 2 seconds, people were actually leaving us in this case.
Yeah.
So for us, it was important to be able to start measuring that metric of app launch. You know, first, it needs to launch. And the second one is it needs to occur. In our case was, we wanted 80% of our sessions to be less than 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, put targets. If you don't put targets, who cares? You know, if you put a KPI or that without a target, who cares? Nobody will go against it. Yeah, nobody will go. So it's important to put your targets. And you're going to see some of them without targets, and I'll explain why. It's not that we didn't want to put targets. Sometimes we just don't know how to put the target. Yeah, it's really interesting. Other areas that we talk about, resource utilization, startup memory. I worked in HoloLens 2.5 years ago. And the resource utilization, we actually have frames per second, FPS. And it was 60. And it was extremely important because one of the things that you can do when you have a TV, it's mixed reality, it's not a TV. But you have, imagine a TV in your eyes running like at 10 frames per second. Yeah. So we had to achieve 60 frames per second all the time or higher, because otherwise we cannot actually affect the user. Yeah. So the refresh rate was extremely important, and you could not imagine how much work we had to do that specifically with everything when you have us all the systems together, all the sensors, all these things together to be able to keep that FPS based on the power that you had. This is a really interesting challenge that we had. But what I'm going towards to is a lot of times on the resource utilization depends on the type of things you want to do. You may want to measure FPS, in our case, was important. In your case, may not be as important, you know. Or you can say, hey, I just want to measure really low FPS, not important. But you can need to define what is important for you. Memory most of the times is important, but there's, I have used some apps, they don't think that's important. They hug your whole thing, but it's something that we looked at. And most of the times, I don't know, you're going to notice in my side, I push extremely hard. And I think it's good is we try to do everything in percentages. We try to normalize and always to try to go to 100% to make it easier for people to read. So a lot of times what you see is more than 2 seconds or less than 3 seconds. And hey, less than 15 megs of memory. And it becomes harder and harder to be able to look at it. But when you look at percentages, it's just easier. But the first question people ask is, what do you mean 94% success on startup memory? We actually, our targets in our case was less than 150 megs specifically for that one. And wanted every possible startup memory that happened in that. So we measured that. And of course, we had a lot of more of them in that area. It's not about those two, but we went against reliability. And it's really interesting because sometimes the counts, you see the counts there. Most of the times the counts is rarely that we put a target, but it gives you a sense of statistically relevance of that KPI. You know, if you have reliability and you have 3 crashes, okay, or if you have only, for example, this case is almost a million sessions, yeah? If you have 3 sessions, reliability is 20%, I don't think you should go against it yet. You know, you need to wait a little bit more. It's not statistically relevant. So we use that in that case to make sure it's more relevant that. Looking at my time, okay, make sure. I have 1 hour, is all right? Perfect. Right, and this is other examples that we did. You know, I said frames per second. I'll give you guys an example. CPU, the use of CPU is another one that we measured. There's definitely more than this in this case. We can talk about when it, the other ones, I don't have it here, but we did it also per scenarios. I'll give you the example of file open. It's a great scenario, but we did, in the area I was on, we actually track cut, copy, paste, open, a specific scenario based to be able to know what is the experience of the users on cloud and the health of that. We did it that, so you can define your scenarios. And again, double the ocean, you can have 150,000 scenarios, but you can go and define some of them that are the most important ones for you. An experience hub was really interesting because, and this, of course, I talk about the stores and the store ratings and sentiment, but was also interesting for us in the experience to start talking about, hey, how many people is really using the specific app in a specific way? And this is really interesting. In this case, let's see if I have it here. Let's see, coverage. Oh, perfect. So in this case, this is when we started early in our product working in 3D to start understanding how many people were using our 3D tools. You know, you have 3D, you start using the 3D tools. So you have 2D tools and 3D tools. And we started finding out that, hey, for the 3D tools specifically, from all the people using it, only 2% of that population was using it. Yeah. So that's really interesting. You're working, building 3D thing, and only 2% of your whole population uses it. Do you think you have a design problem? And it was really interesting and eye-opening because, and I didn't show it here, but actually, and of course, so let me see, let me finish my thought. Of course, you talk about how many people's using overall your population, and when they use it, what is the success rate of usage of that? Like, is it actually, do they have bugs in it when they're using it? Because at first, if you only 2% is using it, the first thing that comes to mind is like, the stuff is broken. Yeah. No, it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah. There is some cases where we said, hey, whenever you're using it, it's taking too long to be able to use stuff like that. But that was not our main culprit of the issue that we had, actually. And it was interesting because one of the things that we did to be able to understand the data is, can we separate that by age group? And the main reason we did that is because 3D is, 3D, I don't know how many, I'm not a master of creation on painting, but I'm not good in 2D. Can you imagine myself in 3D? I'm not the best of painting 3D. And also, yet what you can see things in 3D, painting in 3D is not as normal for everybody. It's not, it's a brain type of development that you can have. And we start finding out that people who are less than 24 years old, they love the app. They actually start finding out that they're the ones they use the most. But people who were more older than that were like, you know, your app sucks. Yeah. And it's really interesting for us to look into that because, as you see, I have a kid who's 15 right now, and he teaches me how to use everything, including Snapchat, which is really hard to use. And it's the only way you can communicate with your kids all day. So, but it's really interesting because they're fast, they're easy, they don't need instructions, they don't need things, and it was really easy for them to, they grab the app like, oh, it's pretty cool. Yeah, but we start finding out these people that are older, they need a little bit more help. I don't know why, but I guess we get slower, or I get slower on that. And then we start putting instructions and things that how to use some of these pieces, but also working with them to how to make sure that it was easier, that experience was easier to learn how to use 3D and thinking about 3D. Yeah. But this is what data starts giving you, their start understanding. And that's why I start talking about dimensions, about how important to start. In our case, segregation by age, it became so, so important to understand that those some of the experiences. And also, you could define at your business that your audience is actually not ever is not me. So it's everybody under 24. You could define that. And then I'm just going to go against that and make that experience better against that set of people. But this is how this pyramid starts helping you understand the type of things that you do and structure it that way. And at the end, of course, you want to measure your business. As you see here, I don't have money. I don't talk about money yet on that. But we do talk about one key KPI, which is how many people is using actually rendering 3D. And this is how I was talking with you guys about. And you can have, look, in our app, a lot of people can use 2D, a lot of things related to it, tools. But at the end, the main action we wanted people to do is, are you doing 3D or not? Yeah. And we started finding out only in this case, 32% of our population when we're doing our testing was using it from all those 2 million people. And we say, we want to improve it. And that's why you start pushing into, what is my business? And then you can start looking into the 3D usage and say, okay, what are the main things that are causing the usage to go high? Should we expose those tools and make those tools better to other people? And you start doing some of the data science and be able to say, here are the top tools and features using for that. If you have people copy and pasting 3D images, is what increases the amount of usage. So you start, you can do a lot more things related to that. And like I said, this is all important because all data is correlatable. Yeah. And that's the main reason we work really hard to put it in the pyramid. Any questions before I go to the other ones? Any questions?
So a more important way to say it is that business health comes first. That's what you want to say.
I think it is extremely important, but your business depends on the rest. Yeah. I think that one of the biggest things, and it's really interesting because I'll say that I didn't have targets, we didn't have targets. It's really interesting to see. And it goes to your question on business health. I was mostly in my area when I was in this team. I was the engineering group engineering manager talking about building the systems, building telemetry, the KPIs, bunch of data scientists thinking about what is important. And the first question I went to my manager, who was the whole gem of group engineering, that's the group manager who was the business head. I said, hey, what is success for the business? Took us like 6 months. Yeah, to pretty, like we knew what we wanted to do in the space, but what success means is not as easy that you look like for what is success for that business, you know? I would define that success was to be able, one, users and usage, heavy usage, and two, heavy usage on 3D, because at the end we're doing 3D, yeah? And we said, hey, we want to be able, then the question I was for me is, what is the target? And this is where it becomes really interesting. We definitely, the targets were something really hard because we said, we can try to go and understand that. And we send the marketing team and say, okay, how many 3D tools exist out there? How many people they are? In our case, the problem is the target audience for some of those tools were mostly artists and people, which is a small set. For us, it was a bigger audience. They start thinking, do I compare myself to what? Any type of, like, which app I compare myself to doesn't exist, you know? So this is where we say, well, let's not define a target. We actually, since we were in Windows, we said, hey, we want to capture 7% of all the Windows devices usage. That's what, but was that, did that come with a mathematical model, things like that? And we'll just put in there, they put it, but that's what, I mean, honestly, sometimes you start that way and you start figuring out what do you want to go, what is the thing, what do you want to do, so. Any other questions? No? Good? Great. The other example I have, this is from Office, in Office Reliability and Anomaly Detection. And this is related to how we use the data to be able to early detect issues with our product. The first thing for me to show you guys is the definition of, we do a lot of projects and plans related to anomaly detection or any type of things. And I want to talk with you guys that most of the times it's really important to define when you start any of these projects is what success looks like. I want to show this model because it was important for us to start standardizing every time we did an investment on data science or anomaly detection is data science project for us. We define this a little bit and say, hey, let's understand really well how we define this success. What is will be a detailed walkthrough of that success or looks like? And the third one, how long is it gonna take me? And last, how many resources are you gonna use for it? Yeah. And most of the time on timeline resources, I'm not gonna talk about them because that's regular project management 101. You know, you talk about here's gonna take me, here's the amount of people, this is project management 101. But the definition of what success, I'm going to give examples of that, and the walkthrough of it, I'm going to give examples of that specifically about reliability in Office. So the first thing is, what is anomaly detection? You guys, I don't know how many of you guys know what anomaly detection. This is just coming from Wiki. I just want to make sure you guys understand for us what it was. Anomaly detection for definitely for us was an outlier specifically for a regular things, a regular system of belief is actually standard that confirms to a system and there's a pattern outside of that system. That's for us anomaly detection, how we define it. And there we start thinking about, hey, how do we understand, in this case, it's really interesting. A lot of things that we do in Microsoft is self-hosting or dogfooding. I don't know how many of you guys do this, but this is for us to be able to use our product before it goes out to the public. And we have during that set different, what we call different rings or rings of happen. So at my team level, I start using the product every day. We have deployments. I'd be interested enough. I use Outlook with a new build in my phone every day. Is every new build every day? And then you start seeing, okay, I can expose it to more people and more people and more people. And you start thinking into, okay, can I start finding some of the anomaly detection based on that? And the first thing we started looking into it is per builds, can I understand it? And can I understand if there are anything related to the series, specific to each one of the builds per product that we have and a specific set of actions, you know? In this case is Word for Windows 32 because Word can go in the phone, iOS, Android, yeah. And we start understanding, hey, what is the specific ring that you are on? CC is a channel, it's a ring that we have in there, says. How the file open looks like. Are anybody getting any problems with access denied to file open? Is that increasing or not increasing build to build? Can I start seeing an outlier? Yeah. And then it's a time series, you know, within time, can you start seeing, within time and builds, can you see any type of defect based on that? Is that exposing some of that? Yeah, and you start talking about it, you start normalizing that information, and at the end we transform that information so it is easily statistically more relevant, so we can do the specific bell curve. And then we start thinking about, okay, now that I have normalized all that stuff, now that I expect this to come this way, can I put a threshold that I can alert on, an alert on that system? And it's something that we did based on just errors, specifically to errors that come to the product. And I can actually cluster those errors based on the actions or scenarios. And then I can see anything that is outside the normal, build to build and a timeline basis, yeah? Now, if you don't put a structure related to the pyramid that you have, that you understand that, hey, for file open, this is the type of KPIs, this type of errors that you have, things like that, this becomes harder and harder. Like if you don't have a really good telemetry extraction system, it's just harder. Becomes harder because an error for file open can come from different ways, you know, and you can be able to want to cluster some of that in a specific set of areas that you can do it. And of course, you say the goodness about this system is every time that we try to go from a set of rings of people that are exposed to this, I can look at this information and I can say, can I go or not go? Has anything changed from the past on the user base? We say yes or no, and then we can go. And we can do it that way. It makes it faster for you to go build over build. Once you have your metrics, once you have anomaly detection, you have your models, then you start going faster and faster and faster. And it was really interesting because you can look at per product, yeah? But also, I don't know how many guests have the same problem. We also have shared components and shared code across Office. You know, the ability for you to file open and open and open a file from SharePoint. Hopefully, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and all the Office apps share that code. You know, hopefully. So you could have a bug in a shared component where you start finding out that file open is actually failing not only in Excel, but it's also open failing in Word. You said, hey, but you know what? In Word, we also have some file save access denied. And you can look in the timeline and you can see, should I pivot this per app or should I pivot this per overall error for file open per scenario? You can start thinking about that. And that's where some of the pieces related to anomaly detection is pretty useful. Clustering is pretty useful. And it can help you find some of those errors and issues that you want. And you want to raise those anomalies to the people, depending on the specific set of days. You say, is it increasing all day today? And can I go on or go? And then, what's success for us on this anomaly detection? Big things that we have for us from when we defined this project was one, hey, by the way, this anomaly detection is hooked to an alerting system that is going to pagers to engineers, that if anything raises alarm, they will have to be 24/7 to be able to come. Something's going right or wrong, and they will have to come to the office. So one of the big things that we had in ourselves is I don't want to wake up somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning to be a false alarm. So a big thing for us was to reduce noise, extremely big, because otherwise it's not good for the whole system, not the people, not for the morale, not for the system, because if it's too noisy, your anomaly detection system is bad. So success for us is low noise, especially in this area, and how quickly we can alert, you know, how fast. From the time that we put a build out towards a detection, yeah, we wanted to do that within 15 minutes. Yeah. And for clients, it's difficult. For apps that you deploy, it's difficult. And services, just you put the service, every user goes there. For apps, you're at the expectation of the users to be able to download the app and do the update. But with a big product such as Office that goes globally, you actually get a really good set of users using the product pretty fast. That's all I have, and with that I conclude, unless you guys have any questions, and we have like 12 minutes for questions, or I think we have a break. Do you guys have any questions? Anything? No? How cool is HoloLens? No? No questions? The same code. How much cost is the measure and how much do the measure? That's a really good question. When you're starting, for sure, the cost is pretty high, like any other investment, because you need to say, is it half of the platform, the system you're going to do? The cool thing that you have over here is that during this week, you're learning a lot about the different tools that exist in Azure. Actually, Azure has a really set of tools that can get you a quick start to be able to get your pipe going, understand that. But the second one is the cost at first is higher, but it diminishes over time. By that, I mean is at first to define a measure, it takes a longer for you to think about what a measure is, what do you want to measure. But once you get it in a role, it's just faster to be able to do it. Once you get in a role, also how you want to instrument, because the first difficult part is the code, also the instrumentation. Is the first time, again, it's really hard. But once you get in a role, what occurs is that the ability for me in the past when I started to define a measure towards be able to have a report out of that measure, in the past, could take me up to 2 months when I started the system. Yeah. But right now, the engineers, every time they create a new feature, yeah, we have sprints, bi-weekly sprints. Yeah. And within 2 weeks, while you build the code, while you're creating the feature, putting stuff, you cannot exit without metrics. And we are able to do it within that time frame. So your executor is with that, you know. And the cool thing about this is the ability for you to detect things earlier or early enough is actually to reduce the cost of your system. But what I mean is, before in the past, we're in this mode that the data we're getting is, we did a full build, a build
full build of the system. We get the build to a tester. The tester had to double click and click over here, click over there, and stuff like that. Just it's a long, long trip, round trip. Right now, we're in the point that we have a new stuff. We have the metric. We have the information. We can put it to our team first, and we can quickly, on the usage, you can know when something has gone right or wrong, and you can actually detect things faster. So long-term run is the cost. It helps you reduce the cost overall of production of your system if you have it in a really good sense. Yeah. Oh, that's a really good... Okay, you're talking about the cost of performance system? It's really interesting because... as anything else, you build layers that anybody else, other people can use. And we have action in the system that we have. We have a specific set of behaviors of the telemetry system where we fall back into performance of the app versus telemetry. But what I mean is we have systems in the app that will kill telemetry if it's bringing your system down. They will kill it. So we are definitely cognizant of that. Like if there's an event that is sending amongst the things and it's actually to affect your system, we actually throttle that and we kill that in the system. We don't let it happen anymore. And we can control some of that. So your concern is really, really correct, totally correct. But it's some of the number one designs that we put in the different platforms that we build on. Definitely on the, what is the user impact? And it has to be zero. And it's really interesting because a lot of engineers ask the same. And it's all the times, let's do it before and after, and start understanding the performance of that, of that telemetry event that we have. You're correct that you need to be careful on that. It's been incorrect. But you can bring the system down. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So I was just looking at the title of your talk, and it says big data. Obviously, there was nothing about big data per se, except to say that, you have to look at big data in the proper way, otherwise you are going to go somewhere else.
Correct. So it's interesting because the talks related to systems and big data stuff that are happening during this week with the different talks that you have about Azure Data Lake, Power BI, all those things. And one of the things I was talking a lot with Michael all the time is like, but how is this people thinking about data? Like, and that's one of my first slide. You see all this data coming, everybody. If you don't have a structural way to think about it, you can get lost pretty quick. And you can spend so much money on it. And believe me, we have done it. That you get lost. And you can see still teams that are looking at things in isolated environments. That's my main talk was that think about it, structurize it in a way that you understand it, and then go for it. And we should change the name of that.
Yeah. In the end, you did recommend how do you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
Do you say that business health comes first? Is that what you are recommending?
I think...
you ought to say that Microsoft recommends blah.
No. I'm not saying that all depends on your business. It depends what you do. For example, right now I'm an engineering team. Yeah. I'm not about making money, not about making users, stuff like that. But I do measure my health on my business. My health on my business is that any engineer that uses my system is happy. And more engineers use my system. Yeah. That said, to make sure that I can accomplish that in a good way, I need to make sure the bottom of the pyramid is really important. So it's not like I'm saying that market is looking like money is the most important piece. It all depends on the business that you have. It all depends what you want to achieve. But if you don't have goals and success for your business, you're not going to get the rest really well.
I mean, in some sense, this is what PMs do, right? I mean, PMs decide what is the right product to build and kind of derives from
there. Yeah. And that's a great thing they're not saying, because that's why I put in the discipline part. And like, who wants that? That's like the GPM. Because... believe me, I have seen engineer managers and PMs fighting over this. And I always say, let's have a discussion about who really owns the business, who has done the marketing investigation to understand what is a niche, where you want to go, and what you want to do, and what does success look like. That should have been the PM. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Thank you all.